My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get a $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Nothing is more important than getting a good night's sleep, and when you don't get the rest you need, your whole day is thrown off. That's why it's so important to choose the right mattress. Sleeping on a Purple mattress is truly a unique experience, because Purple mattresses are made with a GelFlex grid. The GelFlex grid is an innovative material that moves with your body to relieve pressure in areas like knees and hips, and support in others, like your back. It feels soft where you want it and supports where you need it. Purple mattresses instantly adapt when you move. You don't sink in and get stuck like with memory foam. And thanks to over 1,400 air chambers in the GelFlex grid, you will sleep cooler on a Purple mattress. Purple has a wide variety of mattresses, from the original Purple mattress to the Restore Hybrid Collection that combines GelFlex grid with coils, and the Rejuvenate Luxe Collection, the height of luxury, with over 112,000 five-star reviews to prove it. Visit purple.com to find the perfect purple for you and enter code PODCAST10 to get 10% off.
Explaining football to the friend who's just there for the nachos? Hard. Tailgating from home like a pro with snacks and drinks everyone will love? An easy win. And with Instacart helping deliver the snack time MVPs to your door, you're ready for the game in as fast as 30 minutes. So you never miss a play or lose your seat on the couch or have to go head-to-head for the last chicken wing. Shop game day faves on Instacart and enjoy $0 delivery fees on your first three grocery orders. Offer valid for a limited time. Other fees and terms apply.
Both hailing from parts unknown at a combined weight of 501 pounds. They are the Morning Rush Hour World Tag Team Champions. They have no fear, no back down, just a couple of gutsy guys. No one will take those MRH World Tag titles from these men. It's Taz, it's the Moose, illustrious champions, right here every day on CBS Sports Radio.
You know it's every day, Moose and Taz be paving the way. Talking about every sport, you know that they never missing a play. From the NBA to the NFL to college games, they always bringing the knowledge, nobody ever can try to go stop it. Only be talking the truth, only be talking the truth, ayy.
Live from the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studios, millions of Americans finance the home of their dreams. With their help, they can help you too. Rocket Mortgage, push button, get mortgage. Mike, Pete, across the way, Bogus, sitting in with me. Taz is off for the next 3 days, beginning today, and he's also got your updates as we go right up until 9 a.m. Eastern time. Come up later on this hour, we're going to talk to really a baseball savant, former Pirate, former Tiger manager. Jim Leland is going to join Bogish myself coming your way about 40 minutes from now. We'll talk about the Nats having a 3-0 series lead in the NLCS. ALCS gets going again once again this afternoon, 4 o'clock Eastern time, out at Yankee Stadium in the Bronx. As it will be Luis Severino for the Pinstripers against Gerrit Cole. Those are your starters, as that series is not up at a game apiece. Monday Night Football game last night went the Green Bay Packers' way on a last-second 23-yard field goal by Mason Crosby to win it. And the Lions, sometimes as a team that's on the rise, you got to figure out how to win games, right? And the Lions seem to get into their own way because, you know, a few weeks back in Detroit, they were by far the better team against the Kansas City Chiefs, had no business losing that game and lost that game because of turnovers and sloppy play, as the Chiefs at that stage remained undefeated. Now we know Kansas City has now lost two straight games after that to the Colts and to the Texans, both at home at Arrowhead Stadium, but the Lions were by far the better team. And then last night at Lambeau Field, to lead a game 13-0, Bogish, and then 22-13, and for the Packers to be able to score, you know, 10 unanswered points to close the game out, highlighted by that, you know, the touchdown pass that brought them within two, and then the Crosby-made field goal as time expired to win it. I mean, that is another dastardly loss for the Detroit Lions.
And I was ready, Moose. They had won four in a row head-to-head. They smacked the Packers in Lambeau last year, coming off a bye. I was ready for them to win this game last night, to look relatively good in the process, and then this morning to have a real conversation about how good they were big picture in the NFC. Like many people, they've been very intriguing to me because of Stafford and Galladay and Kerryon Johnson.
They can run it.
And you know what? I thought Matt Patricia, and it was maybe unfair to judge him off just 1 year, but you know, last year felt like Matt Patricia was going towards Charlie Weiss and Romeo Crennel. They were, you know, good assistants, good coordinators, but maybe weren't ready to be head coaches. That Belichick was Belichick and nobody else could be him, even learning right next to him. And I thought then this year, you know, they had fixed a few things, certainly. Looks to be a better overall kind of running a better ship. And then last night, you just, bottom line is, before we get to the penalties in the fourth quarter, you just can't kick 5 field goals. Two of them were basically point afters. You got to get the ball in the end zone. It shouldn't have been 13-0. It should have been 20-0. And then it could have been a full 2-touchdown lead going into the fourth quarter if you get touchdowns, not field goals. And again, the penalty is probably the lead story, and they rightly should be in the fourth quarter. But that's the sub-headline, is they left too many points on the field against a good team on the road.
Yeah, don't disagree. You're right about that. You know, some coaches will tell you when you're kicking a field goal, you know, you're one step closer to losing the game. And you're right. Too many field goals last night for the Detroit Lions. Now, the penalties called on Trey Flowers, though. It's overtaken the National Football League with the amount of penalties that are going on here in the NFL. It is amazing when you look at it, week in and week out. The first one that was called on a 3rd-and-10 sack, right?
Yep, midfield.
At midfield. I mean, that was not hands to the face. Neither was the second one. I mean, listen, he's high up on the shoulder pads. He's not in the face mask. He's not sticking his hand through the face mask on Bakhtiari at all. None of that is transpiring. Both penalties are bad penalties.
Yeah.
And both of them gave the Green Bay Packers first downs.
Here's me again nitpicking. The rule technically says above the head, neck, and face. So, like, a throat punch is technically a penalty. But those are just not penalties.
Would you have called that a penalty last night?
I'll say this to you. I did not see the penalties live. I woke up this morning to the refs did it again. They blew two calls. Watching it back this morning, so, like, from starting at the point of they messed this up, to in no way defend the calls, I can at least see why Jeff Rice, the umpire who called both of them, why he thought it was a penalty. I could see there's the hand up near the chin, and I think
and
to his credit,
his head goes back.
And I don't know if that's on purpose or because of the contact, but both times he puts his head back, which is one of the telltale signs of hands to the face.
Correct.
So I guess in my mind, I can see how we got the flags. But seeing it 14 different times and having Booger McFarlane yelling in my ear, and I don't remember the guy on ESPN's name. I think it's John Parry, who's there, Gene Steratour.
Yep.
He more democratically didn't like the calls either. I'll default to their expertise. They weren't penalties. And in particular, they were just horribly timed flags for the Lions because it's 4th and more than 10, so they're punting, and then I think it's 3 plays later they're in the end zone. And then the key to the second one is it lets them take all the time off the clock before the Crosby kick.
Right.
So there's no chance, instead of like about a minute or so for the Lions to counter, they've got nothing, the game's over.
Well, I mean, I think the second one is closer than the first one. I thought the 3rd-and-10 sack, hands to the face, is an atrocity of a call. I thought the second one, because of Bakhtiari's head going back, I thought that was closer to being a penalty, or I can understand why that gets called a penalty. And that was 3rd-and-5 or 3rd-and-6, I believe, at the time. Gave him a first down. You mentioned it, you know, that it allowed the Packers to run out of the clock after Jamal Williams went down because the Lions were basically going to let him score try and get the football back. And Williams goes down at the 3-yard line.
I love both sides of that play. I love the Lions letting him score to get the ball back. And I love him having the wherewithal to sit down and not score.
Yeah, I agree with you.
On a very small side note, I love both sides of that decision.
Yeah, don't disagree with you. And the Lions looked obviously very frustrated when Williams decides to go down. And then a couple kneel downs later from Aaron Rodgers, a timeout by the Packers, and Crosby's hitting a chip shot field goal to win it. You're right about the Lions. They left too many points up on the field. They've got to finish off those drives. They can't settle for field goals. They've got to score touchdowns. I'll tell you, though, this Detroit team, even though you've had a couple frustrating losses, and really an opening week frustrating tie against Arizona, because you had no business.
Nope.
They should that game should never have ended in a tie. You know, we can get into, you know, clock management, timeouts for the Lions. That game should never have been in a tie. It did, and that almost felt like a loss the opening week. But Patricia could coach, and they brought in a lot of Patriots to kind of instill his message across the board. They run the ball better. Stafford looks good. They've got playmakers at the wide receiver position. They've invested in that offensive line. There's a lot to like about that Detroit team to think that they are a team that is on the rise, and they've got the right guy at head coach. They really do.
And they're in a very, obviously, intriguing division with four good teams in the NFC North. Well, I mean, the Vikings maybe trending back towards being good in the last two games, looking more like we thought they could look. Let's go back to the penalties, though, just for a second, because on top of those two calls, there's what should have been pass interference on the Lions' possession in between those two Green Bay possessions. There should have been pass interference called on a pass on the sideline against Kenny Galladay. And I connect all of those. If you're going to call hands to the face twice, like that has to be a penalty, the pass interference, where I'm blanking on the defender's name, but he basically, you know, starts a kind of a clothesline move and affects Kenny Galladay going up and raising his arms to make the catch. Like, how is that not a flag if we're going to call hands to the face twice on the same guy in the same scenario with the play right in front of that umpire? You've got guys down the field looking at all of this. Like, that's the, to me, the inconsistency is the bigger problem here, is that some things are penalties, some things aren't. Crews are different, games are different, and then the overriding thing is, Moose, we're again sitting here not talking about just the game and just a great Rodgers rally or how the Lions blow
you're
that.
No, you're talking about penalties.
We're talking about penalties that, you know, and the, coming off a Sunday where we had that weird scenario in the Chiefs game where they call pass interference involving Jason Kelce or Travis Kelce, and they took it away. And, you know, Mahomes had thrown the ball in the end zone because he had a free play, and he didn't, so the pick stood. That sequence, Cowboys-Jets, was like eight straight plays. There was a penalty.
Yeah.
I can't believe that they can't get away from this controversy. It is almost at this point a guarantee per game that you've got a player like leaving on a stretcher, looking terrible for the league, and some kind of significant officiating discussion.
Well, you're right about that. I mean, it's the tone in every single game for the most part. And then you can get into the challenges of pass interference when coaches are challenging them and they're keeping the call on the field correct, even though you're looking at it and saying, how is that not pass interference? Because it almost seems like the officials are bothered by this new rule being put in place in the National Football League. And that's something that, you know, what was it, Charles Robinson who wrote about it last week?
Yeah.
He referenced it in the show that we did last Friday?
Yeah.
That we did together, Bogus. So, the NFL's got a problem. I mean, it does, because we're there to watch the games. We're there not to watch laundry come out on the field. And you want guys to, and you want the game called correctly, certainly. But you also want consistency. And when you're seeing stuff that would say, you know, Trey Flowers never been called for hands to his face over the course of his career. And I'm not saying that they weren't close calls, right? But when you're having that call kind of being made, where you're bailing the Green Bay Packers out, one on a sack, one on an incomplete pass, both converting, one third and 10, one about third and 6 or third and 7, whatever it was, to give them a first down and able to control the game situation late in the game. And then you look at the play that you mentioned where the Lions, tough throw, across the field, clearly the receiver was interfered with, and no flag comes out. You're looking and saying to yourself, I understand it's not the same penalty, but where's the consistency here from the officiating crew to where I'm going to call something that's ticky-tack, but I'm going to also not going to call something where a receiver was greatly affected by his ability to catch the football based on the hands or the arm of a defensive back for the Packers. And I'm gonna put my flag in my pocket, and that's gonna be a no call.
Yeah,
that's the frustrating aspect.
And then we haven't even mentioned the play to start the third quarter, where Geronimo Allison gets knocked out by a defensive back going to the ground to intercept a pass from Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah,
and we're back in this conversation now of we're asking D defensive players to basically live in the matrix and contort their body and defy
physics. Right, that should
physics,
never have been a penalty.
It can't be a penalty.
Right.
What is that? What is Tracy Wilson? I think is why I have terrible names recognition this morning. I'm sorry about that, Moose. What is he supposed to do in this scenario where they're both going to their right? The ball is low. Allison's diving. He's coming in low from behind to make the interception.
Yep.
And their heads just, unfortunately for Allison, happen to collide violently. But that can't be a penalty.
No, that's not in the spirit of the rule.
No, I mean, but I think when I watched it this morning, I think, I'm sorry, he didn't defend it, but the official did after the game. The ESPN guy said it should have been a penalty. Clee Blakeman's explanation was that no matter what, helmet contact is a penalty.
Yeah,
and if that's the truth, I mean, why are we even playing? Because that can't be true.
You're right about that because his intent was not there. I mean, you can look at guys' intent when it's a defenseless receiver over the middle, when they have an opportunity, when they lower their head like a bull, and all of a sudden, you know, and it's a helmet-to-helmet collision. When you have a guy that makes the physical play and the commitment and is in the air, right, or is driving towards a... To expect him to all of a sudden stop his momentum or do some kind of twist and turn to prevent that kind of a collision, it's never going to happen. That's why, you know, you look at that play last night, that can't be a penalty.
No.
That just can't be.
Nope.
And, you know, there's some helmet-to-helmet collisions that cannot be avoided.
Right.
That there's nobody that is clearly at fault for those helmet-to-helmet collisions because... It's just human nature. It's a guy going to the ground at the wrong time. It's the, you know, defensive back making a commitment one way. Like, what are you supposed to do if I'm all of a sudden make a commitment as a defensive back where I'm going to hit a guy middle of his chest, and all of a sudden that guy at the last second ducks his head, and I go helmet to helmet. I'm at fault there?
Imagine if that same play, the defensive back coming in, he somehow recognizes what is about to happen, and he like dies out of the way or pulls up and throws his hands up, and Allison makes that catch, and it leads like the deciding points in that game. We'd be destroying that guy for laying off. Now, I mean, maybe in retrospect, we'd go, this is what the NFL wanted, and this is the bed the NFL must lie in, that guys are bailing on legit plays because they're afraid of a quick flag going against them. But like that's where we're going. Like there is no other alternative in that situation for what happened, and it can't be a penalty.
Well, you're right, and you're right about that, and I'll bring up an example. You're a Giant fan, right?
Yeah.
Remember Mathias Kiwanuka?
Yeah.
Vince Young?
Yes.
On the road, Tennessee, Titans. The whole thing about the NFL then was protecting the quarterback. He had him wrapped up. He didn't want to throw him to the ground because he was afraid he was going to get a penalty. They didn't blow the whistle. Vince Young breaks out of it. And then has like a big third down completion, and Kiwanuka after the game is wearing the goat horns.
Yep.
Because he was fearful of a penalty at that stage. Now I'm going back. That's got to be what, 8-9 years ago now?
That's a long time ago.
I mean, it's a long time ago when you look at that play. And that's when Vince Young could actually play the quarterback spot and was in the league. And Mathias Kiwanuka could actually get to the quarterback, the former BC star. But that actually transpired. What you said actually transpired in a game a long time ago. Not the same rule. But we're talking about the spirit of the rule where clearly the way the games were being called affected the play of a player on the field, and it led to a positive play the other way because he didn't finish the job.
I still don't think that the solution to all of these issues is full-time officials, because it's not like they only show up on Sunday and referee a game. They're working on this from like Wednesday all the way through the week. They get reports on Sunday, and they take tests every week, and they get little scouting reports on the teams that are coming up. Like, I don't know exactly how much more time. I don't think the issue here is, like, ignorance to the rules and the situation. I think that maybe we can reassess, like, whatever physical requirements are of officials, that there are probably guys who, whether it's, like, an eyesight thing, a quickness thing, a reflex thing, just overall shape. I mean, I'm 39 years old. I feel like I'm on the borderline of being incapable of physically refereeing an NFL game. And you've got guys who are older than me refereeing NFL games right now. I want to say that, to me, the best idea is to have somebody not on the field. One person, whether
like they did in the AAF.
Yeah, whether he's in New York or actually he's on site, like he can watch things, and while they're discussing on the field, he can come in and go, that's not a penalty, or you guys missed this, and then things get fixed in the moment. But even then, now we're trusting a guy who might be as incompetent as the guys who are on the field right now.
Well, you hope that somebody watching it on, you know, can look at the play and say whether or not it's pass interference
but
or not.
But he still might have thought that was hands to the face in one of those situations last night.
You're right about that. You know, it's open to interpretation, so you're never going to take the human element completely out of it. But the one thing that would also affect when then people would be complaining about the flow of the game. You know, in terms of if a call gets made, then all of a sudden you go up to how long does that process take? How much time are you stopping there? I don't disagree with you. I agree. I'd like to get all the calls right. You know, but I cannot take when you've got Jim Nantz on CBS complaining about the amount of flags. Yeah. He is Mr. NFL and Mr. Goff. When you've got Nantz complaining about the flags, openly complaining about the flags, that's when you're the NFL, you've got a problem.
Yeah, I'm trying to think now. I had a running count. Not all of those flags in that Cowboys-Jets sequence were, like, illegitimate. Some of them just had to be called.
And I don't disagree with that.
You can't not call penalties. If the players commit them, you have to call them. So, like, that to me was just more annoying than, like, indicative of the problem that exists now, that the NFL just keeps bungling this and finding new ways to mess up each weekend. Like, have you ever seen that Chiefs Texan scenario?
I did see, yeah.
No, but like, have you ever seen anything before?
I've never seen that, where all of a sudden pass interference gets picked up and the interception upheld?
Well, and then, you know, I didn't see it live. Going back through it, and Pro Football Talk wrote about it, and then they discussed it because Mike Florio was on the Sunday Night NBC coverage as well. There's video of, not the referee, but one of the guys involved, like, he's puts his finger to his earpiece, because, you know, they have headsets, so they can talk to each other, and, like, he puts his finger to his earpiece, which you do when you're trying to hear something, and then they change the call. So the people are going, and CBS showed this, like, was somebody in his ear going, that can't be pass interference because the pass wasn't to Kelsey? Like, it was somebody somewhere in their ear adjusting this call, because how did they...
I don't know.
Like, in the decision... Because the play was moving on.
What did Florio... I missed Florio on NBC. What do you have to say about
it? He didn't... The post on their site was more expansive. On TV, he and Dungy just crushed the whole thing.
Yeah, it was terrible.
That you can't... First of all, it's wrong. Second of all, because the mechanics were weird, too. They called it, and then they were about to start up... They were back at the line of scrimmage, and then the conversation started again, which is when the earpiece thing happened, as if somebody was telling them that they were doing it wrong.
Yeah,
I've never seen
anything like that before. Here's the other thing they have, and you know, the other issue you have here is the very fact that the experienced guys all ran to TV.
Yeah, they knew better. I'm out.
I mean, right? They all basically got out. So you're dealing with guys that a majority of them you've never seen before, that are working their way through certain things too. I'm not saying they, you know, it's all of a sudden they show up and they're like, oh, this is football. I've never seen a football game before. Yeah. Like, they've got experience refereeing other, you know, levels of football, but it's different when you're going from college to the NFL. And
these guys are fast.
Yeah, right. It's certainly different. Right. I'm used to Australian rules football. What is this game?
I just came from middle school. Those kids are slow.
Over in England, football's soccer. Football's different over here.
Where's the little flag belt? You guys just yank that off? How does this work?
So they're dealing with that in experience as well. Want your calls at 855-212-4227. Taz and Moose, Bogish in the house. Taz is off here on this Tuesday morning. It's CBS Sports Radio.
It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio. You're listening to Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
All right, CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line of 855-212-4CBS, 855-212-4227, brought to you by Geico. Great news, quick way you can save money. Switch to Geico, go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes you can save 15% or more on your car insurance. Let's head out to South Carolina. It's Patrick at CBS Sports Radio. What's up, Patrick?
Good morning, Taz. Good morning, Moose. Good morning, Andrew.
What's up?
What's up?
Taz says good moment as he's sleeping right now. What's going on, Patrick?
All right, man. Just let you know, everybody's feeling pretty perplexed about the calls from last night. I just wanted to remind you guys about the Oakland Raider-Denver Bronco game 2 years ago, Monday Night Football. We had 3 untimed downs at the end of that regulation to get the Oakland Raider win. And ever since then, man, I just feel like the NFL has an agenda that the referees come out and they try to make sure that the things go the way they're supposed to go. And I just wanted to hear you guys weigh in on that.
You know, Patrick, I've never felt that way about sports. And, you know, there are buddies of mine that kind of feel your way, Patrick, that, you know, not that every outcome is predetermined, but that there's a lean or...
Or like, oh, know, we need this to get to game six.
Correct.
Yeah.
You know, I've really never felt that way. I mean, I know the NBA, when you come back home, you're going to get the benefit of the whistle. I understand star players get the benefit of the whistle. We all witnessed that with Michael. We see with LeBron, Steph Curry, what have you. You know, to the aggressor go the spoils. You're going to get to the free throw line. Just ask James Harden, who lives at the free throw line for the Houston Rockets. You know, but I've never had a scenario where I believed in that kind of conspiracy theory. And listen, there were some that looked at what Tim Donaghy had to say and said, listen, told you. I mean, I told you. Listen to this. I mean, you know, the predetermined guys, referees, guy, you know, I told you it's all because I do think sports is pure. I'm not saying every sporting event, you know, is pure. I'm not saying every boxing match is pure, every horse race is pure, I'm not telling you all that. I'm not gonna tell you that road, but I do think when you look at, you know, the NHL, the NBA, the National Football League, Major League Baseball, you know, there's so much money involved in today's day and age. I do think at that level, Bogish, I do think the sport is pure. I don't think there's, you know, any kind of an influence to where this series needs to go longer. The NLCS can't end in a sweep by the Nats. We've got to get this series back to St. Louis. You know, now I'm going to call, you know, an obscene strike zone this after, you know, right, tonight for the St. Louis Cardinals. And we're going to try and help them out as best we can to get this series, you know, back to, you know, to a game five down in Washington. I don't believe in that kind of stuff.
No, my guess is all the things that you think are conspiracy theories are just straight incompetence by the officials working the game. But like, and I'm not a conspiracy theory guy in general, just because they, no matter what, they take a lot of people. And when they take a lot of people, that's when things slip out and come out and whispers happen. And somebody gets angry about their spot in the conspiracy theory. And then they whisper something to somebody in the media or whatever. And then off we go. I mean, the idea that like somebody in MLB headquarters is told by like Rob Manfred, so like again, the chain of command would be like Rob Manfred goes, you know what, we really need the NLCS to extend into the weekend. So like, right, the Nats can't at least give me a game five. So okay, so I'm Rob Manfred. So now my first whatever is to, I don't know what I would use, some kind of like disintegrating phone, or I whispered in your
ear. A burner phone, right?
So there's no, you know, Mark, get on the horn to Hunter Wendelstedt,
yeah,
who's umping tonight. And just, you know, he's not going to understand. You know, just tell him Nats in five, and he'll get it. You
right, know, or, no, tell him two words, Eric Gregg.
Right, what's the code word? We're gonna EG this one.
Right, EG. So Levon Hernandez, Braves, Marlins. Go back and watch that strike zone. So Eric Gregg, God bless his soul.
So now you've at least got three guys involved in all of this. But then you've also got, like, the other six umpires who might see the strike zone tonight and go, that seems fishy. Why?
Yeah, right,
he's
exactly
usually a better umpire. Like, that seemed to be a little outside. Like, why are you calling that a strike? Or, you know, maybe his last extra stipend for throwing game one of the LDS hadn't come in yet. And to keep the league honest, he might whisper something to somebody about, like, so, like,
yeah,
it's just, none of these, it's just not feasible in my head that the league is dictating how games should be played out. I just think sometimes umpires/referees suck at their job.
Yes, I don't disagree with you. I don't. And so, you know, I look at, you know, that, and I get, you get bad calls and guys, as Bogus was mentioned, guys that do a terrible job. I think that's really what it is. It's more incompetency. And I agree with Andrew than anything else. As frustrating as that might be. Listen, I root for the Redskins. They're incompetent of its own right.
I wish, can I get some help?
I wish it came down to a play call. Three untimed downs at right, the end of a game. I wish there was meaningful, impactful hands to the face at the end of the game. You know, I got buddies of mine texting me, hey, great job beating the Dolphins.
Yeah?
Yeah, I know. You're only a couple games out.
I mean, that's happened around here too. Like, whoa. The 2-4 Giants are one game behind.
Yeah,
and they have four.
They're
winnable,
right there.
Yeah, and they've got four winnable games coming up. Like, these are the Giants. I know those two initial Daniel Jones wins were great, but have you seen the Giants play defense? I mean,
they're terrible.
They got Kyler Murray this weekend. If you don't think Kyler Murray and David Johnson and Chase Edmonds and the possibility of Christian Kirk coming back and Larry Fitzgerald are going to carve up this Giants linebackers and secondary. You haven't been paying attention for like the last decade.
Yeah.
The Giants are not going to in any way recover to compete in the NFC East this year.
They're not going on any kind of a run. I totally agree. 855-212-4CBS is your number to call all morning long. It's Taz and the Moose. Bogus in for the vacationing day off Taz. And Taz is out today, tomorrow, and Thursday, so Andrew will be filling in. He'll be back with us on Friday morning. Andrew, you got an update for us. What's going on, brother?
And this one is sponsored by Geico. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Go to geico.com, and in 15 minutes, you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Somehow, we again left an NFL game with major valid complaints about the officiating. The Packers scored a touchdown early in the fourth quarter. Then Mason Crosby kicked a 23-yard field goal as time expired to steal a 23-22 win from the Lions at Lambeau. Both those drives extended by sketchy hands-to-the-face calls against Lions defensive end Trey Flowers. Matthew Stafford was not getting involved postgame.
We know we're not playing the officials, playing the Packers. Calls are going to go your way, go against you. I got no clue which ones were close or not, but that's the way it goes.
His Lions led 13-0, then 22-13, in position for their fifth consecutive win head-to-head. Instead, they dropped to 2-2-1, while the Packers improved to 5-1. It's nearing decision time for the Panthers. Cam Newton reportedly ready to return to practice from his foot injury. Carolina is off this week. They're 4-0 with Kyle Allen filling in. It is not decision time in Tampa Bay. Meanwhile, Bucs head coach Bruce Arians said yesterday he has not considered benching Jameis Winston. After 5 picks and a fumble in Sunday's loss to those Panthers in London, Winston's 10 interceptions on the season trail only Baker Mayfield's 11. And Steelers D tackle Stephon Tuitt reportedly suffered a season-ending torn pec in Sunday night's win at the Chargers. First, it was Anibal Sanchez, then Max Scherzer, now Steven Strasburg.
Here's the 0-2. Swing and a miss. He got him on a changeup. Steven Strasburg fans, a dozen St. Louis Cardinals over 7 innings.
That's Dave Jagler on Nats Radio. Strasburg's night was done at that point. 7 innings, an unearned run, 7 hits, no walks, and those 12 Ks. He had plenty of support. A 4-0 lead after 3. 3 doubles, 3 RBI from Howie Kendrick, a solo shot from Victor Robles after missing 5 games with a hamstring injury. Put it all together, it's an 8-1 win, and the Nats can now sweep the Cardinals at 8 tonight in D.C. But first, it's Game 3 of the ALCS. That's at 4 Eastern Yankee Stadium. The Yanks and the Astros breaking their 1-1 tie with Luis Severino and Garrett Cole on the mound. Not sure, Moose, if Taz is away right now interviewing for the Mets job, but their surge does continue. Eduardo Perez reportedly getting a second interview with the team. The 13-year vet and current ESPN analyst.
Phone interview went well for Eduardo.
He's also been the Astros bench coach and the Marlins hitting coach, so he at least has some dugout experience playing career.
I don't mind the Mets doing their due diligence. I really don't. Whether it be Beltran, who basically says, I can't wait to manage. Now, the Mets are the only team I want to manage, but I can't wait to manage. Now, you throw in Eduardo Perez, you throw in Mike Bell, who's what, the senior director of the minor leagues, I believe?
Yeah, he's the farm director for the Diamondbacks.
Farm director for the Arizona Diamondbacks, whether it be Girardi, whether it be Buck Showalter. I don't mind them talking to all these guys because I think you can, as far as intel and information, you could see what the perception of your team is from other vantage points and other viewpoints. I think that's doing your due diligence. Now, if you mean to tell me they hire, Mike Bell or Eduardo Perez over, say, Joe Girardi?
Because they don't want to pay Joe Girardi money?
Then I've got a problem.
Agreed.
Then I've got a problem. I mean, because I think it just makes too much sense for Girardi. He's still, he had success with the Yankees for 10 years. He knows the marketplace. You're in a win-now scenario. Why? You want to minimize risk. Girardi makes all the sense in the world. And I think Girardi's a better candidate than Buck.
Me too.
I think Buck can be a little divisive.
Yeah, I could accept Dusty Baker before Buck Showalter, and I feel a little LeBron-ish. It's just my belief. I can't put my finger on exactly why I'm like lukewarm on Showalter. Maybe it is just the overall kind of, the atmosphere, the demeanor, the roughness. I just don't know if that's what the Mets actually need.
Yeah.
So give me Girardi, give me Dusty Baker, give me Beltran before anybody else.
Those
three guys.
I would put them in that exact order.
Yeah. And I think, to me, Beltran is the only kind of first timer I'd sign up for. The Mets can miss on Beltran. If he somehow doesn't work out, I get it. But you can't swing and miss on Joe Espada or Eduardo Perez, who have no Mets connections.
Agreed. I think that's a very valid point. We're going to talk a little baseball. Jim Leland, former manager, I mean, all-time great baseball man, legendary face and voice in Major League Baseball, manager with the Pirates and the Tigers, going to join Bogus and myself next. We'll talk a little NLCS, a little ALCS. Game 3 this afternoon out at Yankee Stadium in the Bronx. Some of these managerial openings as well, as he'll join us next. Taz Moose, CBS Sports Radio.
It's Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio. You're listening to Taz and the Moose on CBS Sports Radio.
All right, let's get into a little baseball. NLCS, 3-0 series lead for the Nats. Yankees and Astros get going once again. Game 3 later on this afternoon in the Bronx. Let's welcome aboard legendary manager with the Tigers and the Pirates as well. Jim Leland joins us now. Hey, Jim, Mark Malusis, Andrew Bogus with you. Thanks for a couple minutes this morning. We certainly appreciate it.
No problem, guys.
You know, Jim, let's start here. You know, for the Nats, I mean, it is amazing for a franchise that, you know, couldn't find wins in the postseason, you know, to come back the way they did against Hader and the Brewers in that wild card game, right? 2-1 down against the Dodgers, 3-1 down in the eighth against in game 5 in Los Angeles to win that. And now to be up 3-0 with this dominant starting, whether it be Anibal Sanchez, Scherzer, and Strasburg last night with the 12 strikeouts. I mean, it seems like after that Brewer victory, I mean, that whole entire team started to believe that they could actually win in October.
Well, I mean, they got a good team. I mean, they've had some good teams in the past. You know, playoffs are a different thing. Sometimes you can do well in the playoffs. So other times things don't go right and you get beat. But they've had some good teams in Washington, obviously. And this one's clicking at the right time. Their starting pitching has been fantastic. They're getting some big hits. They're putting the ball in play with two strikes. It happened last night quite a bit. Rendon a couple different times put the ball in play. I think they might have been the best two-strike hitting team in the National League this year. So, you know, right now they're clicking. They got that dominant starting pitching. And, you know, it looks like they're going to probably close this series out, you know, at some point within the next couple of days.
Jim, on the flip side, how do you handle this if you're Mike Shields? How do you get your bats to wake up? How do you keep your guys focused when, you know, 3-0 is almost insurmountable? How do you start the rally with game 4 today?
Well, I don't think, I mean, you can't be phony about it. You can't try to run from it. They're not hitting. They know that. Is there any secret, you know, therapy for it? No. I mean, you just keep grinding it out. And you just try to win one game in a short series. You know, you win one game, okay, you're down 3-1. Okay, you win another game, you're down 3-2. You just have to, you know, the one at a time, I know that gets old talking about, but that's really what it is. That's basically what playoff baseball is. So, you know, you just got to go out and win a baseball game. And there's no magic for it. You know, I've been through it myself where postseason, there was some times we hit, and there was other times we didn't. And when we didn't hit, we got beat. So the other thing I think you got to remember is postseason, it can happen because in the postseason, the reason those teams are there probably is because they got good pitching. And, you know, if you look at the matchup in New York today, I mean, that's good pitching. I know Severino's coming back and hasn't pitched that much lately. But, you know, you're running into really top-notch pitching when you're running into playoff teams, and that's got a chance to shut you down.
You know, aside from the pitching, when you look at this Nat team, how impressed, given his age, are you, Jim, by, you know, what Juan Soto is, you know, up at the plate, kind of being the face of that team, taking over? I know Rendon's an MVP candidate. He's fantastic as well. But given his age, how good is Juan Soto?
Well, he's really good. I mean, everybody knew about him. I saw him in the minor leagues, actually. You know, this kid's something special. We know that. He's a really, really special potential offensive player. You know, he has fun playing the game, and you know, he's on the right team with some veteran guys there like Rendon. He's going to possibly be the MVP. So, you know, they got a couple veteran catchers that have been around. They know what they're doing, and Eaton's gotten some big hits for him, you know. So, there's a lot of things. Zimmerman came up with a couple of big hits last night. There's a lot of things. Kendrick. There's a lot of players that are kind of letting him do his thing. He's so talented. He's so good. But, you know, you got that insurance when you got those veteran players around, and you know, it's helping him out, and it takes a lot of pressure off him.
Jim, obviously, you want to get this series over as soon as possible, but would there be any concern in your mind if you were Dave Martinez about a sweep leading to a long break before the World Series?
Well, I went through that a couple times, and it is a concern. But, you know, you can't worry about that. You got to close it out as quickly as possible, and, you know, you do the best you can. One year we worked out at Ford Field in Detroit. You know, we went over bunt plays and everything like that. It ended up being disastrous. The next time we actually had our instructional league come up to Detroit, and we actually competed in games to try to keep ourselves sharp, had our pitchers pitch against us and vice versa. So, you know, you try to be creative and do whatever you can, but, you know, the fact that if you start laying off for 7 days, I think you can lose some of that mojo that you got going, some of the excitement.
Well, if Dave Martinez gave you a call, Jim, what advice would you give him?
Well, I would just say just what I just said, you know, try to figure out some way to be a little bit creative to keep him going and keep the, you know, keep the attitude going, keep the excitement of Washington, D.C. going. You know, you have to be a little bit creative and do something. I don't know. Like I said, we brought our instructional team up and played, and we tried other things. But, you know, and I don't know if that's the reason we lost or not. I can't answer that. But, you know, like I said, just try to come up with some idea that keeps them sharp. But it's hard to do that if you're not seeing game competition.
Now, you know, we've got Game 3 of the ALCS this afternoon in the Bronx, Yankees and Stros. We've been waiting for this one, you know, all season long, right? The two titans of the American League going at it. And, you know, a splendid pitching matchup here with Gerrit Cole. I mean, the fact that Gerrit Cole, last 24 starts, he's 18-0 with an under 2 ERA. And we've seen guys have great runs. I mean, this is an epic all-time run that Gerrit Cole has put through this year.
No question about it. You know, he's showing great right now. You know, he's got that confidence. He knows he's got a great team behind him. They got a good defense. They got a good offense. I think they're really a well-rounded team. They do a lot of things well. And, you know, I think he's feeding off that. He's got so much confidence in those players. And you know, they're one of those teams that it seems like it's a different guy. You know, Bregman and Brantley and Correa and Altuve. I mean, they're really, really good. First baseman doesn't get much credit. He's really a good-looking hitter. So they got a lot of things going for him. And I think, you know, starting pitcher knows that, you know, the other night they actually hit some balls halfway decent off Verlander, but guys made plays. And, you know, the great play that Correa made after the ball was hit to Altuve, I mean, that looked like it was going to be a run. So, you know, it's a combination of a lot of things. And, of course, you know, this guy was the number one pick in the country years ago. So, I mean, this is not like this is some guy that all of a sudden surfaced out of nowhere. This guy's been really good for a long time.
Jim, the rain that's coming here to New York tomorrow might affect when they actually do it, but both teams are prepared to have a bullpen game in this series. It kind of bothers me that that neither one of them has a fourth starter that they can trust to get to make this one start in this series before flipping it back to their main three guys.
Well, I agree with that. I like to see teams that you know pitch a fourth starter. You know, possibly. You know, I know the bullpen game has become fashionable at sometimes, and if you have to do it, you have to do it. But you know, I would like to see a fourth starting pitcher pitch a game, but, you know, that's you have to do the best you can with what you got. And you got to, you know, when you're in the postseason, you got to go about it any way you can. It gives you the best chance to win the game. So both managers are doing a great job. All four managers, really. I mean, St. Louis isn't hitting, but they're all four have done a great job to get there. And it's an exciting time, and it's going to really be exciting in New York today, and I guess maybe with the rain out tomorrow, that could change your pitching plans.
Yeah, it could affect it a little bit. Put that, you know, potential rain out on Wednesday night with rain in the forecast in the New York area, Jim. How do you think this Astros and Yankees series plays out?
Well, I really don't know. I mean, I learned a long time ago when you're in the business, you know, don't start predicting who's going to win because nobody knows. You know, I think you make a fool of yourself. You know, I've heard guys talk about that. You know, a lot of the guys at home here ask me, hey, you know, you ought to know who's going to win. I have no idea. if I had any idea who was going to win, I might be in the World Series myself. So, you know, it should be a great series. You know, I thought the Cardinal and Washington series would be a little bit better, you know, splitting a couple of games and maybe make it a little bit more interesting, and it still may be. But I don't know. I think you're talking about, without question, two best teams, American League. They're going at it right now. And, you know, it's going to be a big hit. It's going to be one play. I mean, did the play that Altuve, the freak play the other night, turn the series around? Who knows? You know, you just never know. But it's two really, really good, good teams. And with good pitching, Yankees, bullpen probably a little bit better. Houston starters probably better. But, two great teams.
Jim, we got about a minute here. Do you like, is it frustrating at all, as successful as you were as a manager, to see kind of the way the managerial job has shifted here in Major League Baseball?
Well, you know, I don't know if it's shifted exactly as much as everybody says it has. I think it has shifted some. I'm not really privy to that kind of information. Some people talk about sending lineups down and that. I don't know if those are suggestions. I don't know if those are, this is what you got to play today. I don't really believe all that. I think there's more involvement. Basically, there's more information there's been, but we had the same information when I managed. Today, there's a little bit more of it. They talk a little bit about technology in today's game, but, we had technology when I was in the game way years back. I remember the guy that manufactured the first Iron Mike machine was technology. The guy that made the curveball machine was technology. That was technology. When a guy, that had the Iron Mike machine, threw it straight. Then they came up with a curveball machine that threw breaking balls to hitters. I mean, seriously, that's all technology. Now they're talking about the high-speed cameras and stuff. I understand technology. I've been around a long time. So
and Jim, you were great as a manager. We're flat out of time. We appreciate it. Enjoy the rest of the playoffs, all right?
You got it. Thanks.
You got it. Jim Leland, there you have it. His thoughts. You're right. Technology, those are all advances back then. We'll come back to 3. Taz Moose, CBS Sports Radio.
My dad works in B2B marketing. He came by my school for career day and said he was a big ROAS man. Then he told everyone how much he loved calculating his return on ad spend. My friends still laugh at me to this day.
Not everyone gets B2B, but with LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people who do. Get $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/results to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/results. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be, to be.
America's favorite place to watch football is Stadium Swim, located at Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas. Catch all the biggest games at a viewing experience built for sports fans. Chill in one of their 6 pools on 3 different levels for a perfect view of their massive screen. Plenty of seating options, from cozy day beds to private, temperature-controlled cabanas. Stadium Swim. Book your spot today at CircaLasVegas.com.
Nerds. Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Get your head in the financial game with smart investing and budgeting tips straight from the nerds. NerdWallet's experts will set future you up for success with dependable, fact-based insights. No financial misinformation allowed. Learn how to save on your summer vacation, find your next credit card or loan for a big purchase, and invest in your next index fund. Make smarter decisions in 2024. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast on your favorite podcast app.
Recovery from addiction can take many forms, and quite often, it's a team effort. For those in recovery, having support often leads to a better outcome. And for those supporting people in recovery, they celebrate every milestone. Here's to family, friends, loved ones, healthcare providers, and community groups who are essential to helping people find their path to recovery. If you or someone you know is experiencing addiction, visit cdc.gov/stopoverdose to learn more about the various treatment options available.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Norsides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Nor Taste Combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit nor.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.